Death is nothing at all. It does not count. I have only slipped away into the next room. Nothing has happened. Everything remains exactly as it was. I am I, and you are you, and the old life that we lived so fondly together is untouched and unchanged. Whatever we were to each other, that we are still. Call me by my old familiar name. Speak of me in the easy way which you always used. Put no difference into your tone. Wear no forced air of solemnity or sorrow. Laugh as we always laughed at the little jokes that we enjoyed together. Play, smile. Think of me. Pray for me. Let my name be ever the household word that it always was. Let it be spoken without an effort, without the ghost of a shadow upon it. Life means all that it ever meant. It is the same as it ever was. There is absolute and unbroken continuity. What is this death but a negligible accident? Why should I be out of mind because I am out of sight? I am but waiting for you for an interval, somewhere very near, just around the corner. All is well. Nothing is hurt. Nothing is lost. One brief moment, and all will be as it was before, and how we shall laugh at the trouble of parting when we meet again. Good evening, listeners. This is Professor Jonas Armitage, and you're listening to Stories from Dark Places. Tonight's poem is Death is Nothing at All, by Henry Scott Holland. Our story continues to be The King in Yellow by Robert Chambers. We are approaching the end of Masks, and shall begin in the Court of the Dragon next week. But I must say, I'm interested to see how this one ends. It's been a rather interesting ride. Not like the other stories we've read so far. A genuine element of love and concern and an act of sadness. It should be interesting to see how it ends, and I'm glad you'll all be here with me this evening to finish it. And we shall get to our story right after this word from our sponsors, who are terribly essential, I must say.
Hi, this is Danielle from WZHP. When I'm looking for a comfortable place to take the whole family to eat dinner, but I don't want to break the bank, I go to Abby's. Serving the downtown Innsmouth area since 1957, Abby's is a rustic diner that specializes in American comfort food. Whether it's those deep-fried peanut butter and pickle sandwiches you saw in that diner food show, or niche northern cuisine like Alaskan skinheads, or even if you just want a hot slice of stargazy pie, Abby's has it all. Abby's, on the corner of Martins Avenue and 12th Street West. Show your membership to Marsh Hall and get a slice of stargazy pie a la mode on the house.
That same evening, I took the keys and went into the house I had known so well. Everything was in order, but the silence was terrible. Though I went twice to the door of the marble room, I could not force myself to enter. It was beyond my strength. I went into the smoking room, sat down before the spinet. A small lace handkerchief lay on the keys, and I turned away, choking. It was plain I could not stay, so I locked every door, every window, and the three front and back gates, and went away. Next morning, Elcita packed my valise, and leaving him in charge of my apartments, I took the Orient Express for Constantinople. During the 2 years I wandered through the East, at first in our letters, we never mentioned Genevieve or Boris, but gradually their names crept in. I recollect particularly a passage in one of Jack's letters replying to one of mine. What you tell me of seeing Boris bending over you while you lay ill, and feeling his touch on your face and hearing his voice, of course troubles me. This that you describe must have happened a fortnight after he died. I say to myself that you were dreaming, that it was part of your delirium, but the explanation does not satisfy me, nor would it you. Toward the end of the second year, a letter came from Jack to me in India, so unlike anything that I had ever known of him, that I decided to return at once to Paris. He wrote, "I am well, and sell all my pictures as artists do who have no need of money. I have not a care of my own, but I am more restless than if I had. I am unable to shake off a strange anxiety about you. It is not apprehension, it's rather a breathless expectancy of what, God knows. I can only say it's wearing me out. Nights I dream always of you and Boris. I can never recall anything afterward, but I wake in the morning with my heart beating, and all day the excitement increases until I fall asleep at night to recall the same experience. I'm quite exhausted by it, and I have determined to break up this morbid condition. I must see you. Shall I go to Bombay, or will you come to Paris?" I telegraphed him to expect me by the next steamer. When we met, I thought he had changed very little. I, he insisted, looked in splendid health. It was good to hear his voice again, and as we sat and chatted about what life still held for us, we felt that it was pleasant to be alive in the bright spring weather. We stayed in Paris together a week, and then I went for a week to Ept with him, but first of all we went to the cemetery at Sevres, where Boris lay. "Shall we place the Fates in the little grove above him?" Jack asked. And I answered, "I think only the Madonna should watch over Boris's grave." But Jack was none the better for my homecoming. The dreams, of which he could not retain even the least definite outline, continued, and he said that at times the sense of breathless expectancy was suffocating. "You see, I do you harm and no good," I said. "Try a change without me." So we started alone for a ramble among the Channel Islands, and I went back to Paris. I had not yet entered Boris's house, now mine, since my return, but I knew it must be done. It had been kept in order by Jack, and there were servants there, so I gave up my own apartment and went there to live. Instead of the agitation I had feared, I found myself able to paint tranquilly. I visited all the rooms, all but one. I could not bring myself to enter the marble room where Genevieve lay, and yet I felt the longing growing daily to look upon her face, to kneel beside her. One April afternoon, I lay dreaming in the smoking room, just as I had lain 2 years before, and mechanically I looked among the tawny eastern rugs for the wolfskin. At last I distinguished the pointed ears and the flat, cruel head, and I thought of my dream where I saw Genevieve lying beside it. The helmets still hung against the threadbare tapestry, among them the old Spanish morion, which I remember Genevieve had once put on when we were amusing ourselves with the ancient bits of mail. I turned my eyes to the spinet. Every yellow key seemed eloquent in her caressing hand, and I rose, drawn by the strength of my life's passion, to the sealed door of the marble chamber. The heavy door swung inward under my trembling hands. Sunlight poured through the window, tipping with gold the wings of Cupid, and lingered like a nimbus over the brows of the Madonna. Her tender face bent in compassion over a marble form so exquisitely pure that I knelt inside myself. Genevieve lay in the shadow under the Madonna, and yet through her white arms I saw the pale azure vein, and beneath her soft clasped hands the folds of her dress were tinged with rose, as if from some faint warm light within her breast. Bending with a breaking heart, I touched the marble drapery with my lips, then crept back into the silent house. A maid came and brought me a letter, and I sat down in the little conservatory to read it. But as I was about to break the seal, seeing the girl lingering, I asked her what she wanted. She stammered something about a white rabbit that had been caught in the house, and asked what should be done with it. I told her to let it loose in the walled garden behind the house, and opened my letter. It was from Jack, but so incoherent that I thought he must have lost his reason. It was nothing but a series of prayers to me not to leave the house until he could get back. He could not tell me why. There were the dreams, he said. He could explain nothing, but he was sure that I must not leave the house in the Rue Saint-Cécile. As I finished reading, I raised my eyes and saw the same maidservant standing in the doorway, holding a glass dish in which two goldfish were swimming. "Put them back in the tank and tell me what you mean by interrupting me." With a half-suppressed whimper, she emptied the water and fish into the aquarium at the end of the conservatory, and turned to me, asked my permission to leave my service. She said people were playing tricks on her, evidently with a design of getting her into trouble.
The marble rabbit had been stolen, and a live one had been brought into the house. The two beautiful marble fish were gone. She had just found those common things flopping on the dining room floor. I reassured her and sent her away, saying that I would look about myself. I went into the studio. There was nothing there but my canvases and some casts, except the marble of the Easter lily. I saw it on the table across the room, and then I strode angrily over to it, but the flower I lifted from the table was fresh and fragile and filled the air with perfume. And then suddenly I comprehended and sprang through the hallway to the marble room. The doors flew open, the sunlight streamed onto my face, and through it, in heavenly glory, the Madonna smiled as Genevieve lifted her flushed face from the marble couch and opened her sleepy eyes.
What a wonderfully unexpected ending! To think, in such a stash of horror, we would find a sliver of retribution and hope at the end. This is unexpected. I look forward to seeing what sort of things will be in store for us as we continue through Robert Chambers' epic story. I may be a bit biased about eldritch horror and cosmic forces beyond the ken of mortal men, considering my residency of Innsmouth and my personal attachment to the local guild. Anyway, I would like to thank all of you for joining me this evening. Your presence here is the entire reason why we make this broadcast. As much as I hate to do it, I must reach out and ask for your help. Our supporters are growing thin, and the costs of the studio are beginning to pile. If you are able to offer your support to us in any fashion, it would be greatly appreciated. You can find on our Anchor page links to donate to the show, as well as to leave messages if you should like to tell us something or to have yourself heard on the air. I hope you will stop in and take a look. But that's all the time we have for tonight. Join us next week when we enter the court of the dragon and see what Mr. Chambers has in store. Good night, listeners. And please remember, as the summer months grow upon us, the days are hot, the nights are warmer still, and you feel that curl of breath-like warmth and the disturbance of the back of your neck. Remember this, there's nothing to be afraid of. After all, some of the best things only happen in the dark.
Stories from Dark Places was recorded before an imaginary studio audience. All stories performed on this podcast have express written consent from the original author, Jonas Armitage, his studio manager, and the entire staff of WZHB Radio Innsmouth are fictitious characters. It is probably for the best that you continue to believe that.